hang out in Rootland.
Yes.
And yeah, it's pretty simple, we think. So in Rootland.
You want me to bring up the definitions?
Yeah.
So we're talking about the definition of root, right?
Yes.
Well, we're going to get to that. Yeah. Okay. The definition of root. Oh, there's one thing in definition of root that we think we should probably want to change from the definition to the comments.
Right.
And that the N is usually positively geotrophic.
Right. And we maybe need to do something about this grows indeterminately, because now we have these children of root that do not grow indeterminately.
You mean like
spines?
The
spines. Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah. And what about nematophores? Do they grow indeterminately?
Depending on whether the water fluctuates up and down. So as long as you have the potential to do so, you're okay.
But
of course, annuals don't have roots that grow indeterminately because they don't have anything that does.
Yeah, so maybe that we could put it in the comment and say, usually grows indeterminately or something. I don't know. Okay.
That's, there's nothing in the definition about that.
That comes in the spine. Because of the loss of after there.
So we'll think about that one.
There's a squirrel on the line.
Is able to serve the nutritive capacity. That's not like the definition on it.
For what?
Oh, I did propose that as an addition to this.
Is able to serve the nutritive capacity.
Nah.
Okay.
Don't think so.
Okay. Are you guys just discussing this amongst
yourselves? Yeah, we're okay. We're fine. Now, the other one has to do then, it's just tweaking. We have something called tuberous root tuber.
Yes.
Why don't we just have stem tuber? We have shoot axis tuber. Why don't we have root axis tuber as a parallel?
Well, so.
Barry likes those things. And then we have tuber.
We talked about this a little bit yesterday, Dennis. Let me go to the browser here so we can
look. Because it makes no sense to say tuberous root tuber.
Well, you know, we
tuberous means root tuber-like.
We worked through this extensively when we added these terms, and
I know, but you know, the part of the PO is
we'll have to sort of sit down and look at it again. The problem
constantly tweaking the PO to make it more accurate. So
well, yes, okay. I wasn't sure. I didn't know we were going to talk about this today. I would have had some stuff prepared here.
Well, it's okay. I think it's, fairly. So, there you go. Shoot axis.
That's the hierarchy. So let's take a look at it. So what are you suggesting?
I'm just suggesting tuberous root tuber should be root axis tuber. And then it's parallel with shoot axis tuber. And then it doesn't look redundant because tuberous root tuber means tuber-like root tuber. You know, literally, that's what it means.
Well, see the two. Okay,
so keep everything else the same, pretty much. It's just it's me really that's.
Are you suggesting changing the tuberous root tuber
to root axis tuber to be parallel with shoot axis tuber?
Yeah.
Barry, that's I'm beginning to think like Barry.
Yeah, well, I understand the argument for it, but I need to go back and look through the. You know, the history of this?
Yeah.
So, okay. So we have aerial. See, the problem was we had a class called subterranean tuber, but that was confusing because there's.
No, I know. I see what Ramona wrote there. And we've talked about this too, that since two. Whoa. Go back a little bit. One line. Because Ramona noted this, since tubers are shoots. But I don't think tubers need to be defined as shoots. Our definition of tuber is more general now.
I think the tuber is just a storage.
Organ. And then you have a parallel, shoot axis tuber and root axis tuber. And then that's very Barry-like.
I think that's fine.
And we want to keep Barry happy. A happy berry is a good berry.
So there's this, see the discussion here about.
Yeah, I see it.
About the root axis tuber.
But I mean, I'm just saying that sometimes we just have to adjust things so that we're more
right. Accurate. No, I agree. And I think we need to look this over. But, we don't want to get rid of tuberous root tuber, though.
It makes no sense.
We want to add an in-between.
It makes absolutely no sense in the English language to say tuber like root tuber.
Yes.
That's like saying android like robot or something.
The problem was we needed a term for the root that turns into the tuber. So that's, we have a term tuberous root. So that's the root that eventually becomes the tuber.
So that's what he's saying, that you just consider it as root axis tuber, and that is your tuberous root.
So, I mean, this was discussed extensively and agreed upon. I'm not saying we shouldn't add it. I'm just saying I want to review the history of it.
Just add a comment to this tracker and then maybe give it a couple of thoughts and then change
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, well, so why don't you guys post your comments here and what you think should be changed.
We'll do it.
Send the link to everybody. And I agree that root tuberous root doesn't make a good.
I know. We always felt that it was a little bit awkward, but.
Yeah,
it filled the need at the time. So
this is number 47. Is that the at the top?
Yeah.
So we can
yes.
Comment?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. 47. Yeah.
Okay.
By the way, Pankaj, since you're here, I'm sending in this abstract in a couple days, and. I've decided that the interesting talk for the planteome or for the phenome, what is it, phenome 2007. Anyway, mm-hmm. An interesting talk is sort of the, from phenome to genome, mm-hmm. Lessons learned from the plant ontology. That way I can talk about, we realized our terminology needed to change and be modified once we started building the ontology to make it more useful for genomics.
So it's not just plant ontology. I think you should just say ontologies for plant.
Yeah, I agree. Okay.
Ontologies for plant biology, or just say planteome ontologies.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Because I believe you would be talking about phenotypes as well.
Yeah, I'm going to talk mostly about phenotypes, but how if our ontologies aren't good, then it misleads us in terms of looking for things in the genotypes.
That makes sense. Yeah, and I was at in the last couple of weeks, I've been to several meetings, and everywhere now the ontology word has started showing up in the conversation. Data standards and this thing. And by the way, I
have to add a little time in the talk to rebut that guy that wrote that crap on the website that Brandon found.
I met Michael Donahue and Doug Saltis, and they said hi to you.
Oh, yeah. So, okay, good. So I think today we thought we were going to enter Fruit World. Is that correct?
Give me 1 second here. Chris is trying to join the call here. I just got to
go. Okay.
Yeah. What? Well, why don't you guys introduce the new terms that we've just added here? I've got to give Chris this link.
I sent Chris the link in an email.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, thanks.
Maybe it's nap time for him. But he's in San Francisco.
He actually looks at the calendar. That's good. Okay, well, he should be joining shortly then. Okay, so... you guys want to... let's get back and finish talking about the new terms that we've been adding in the PO.
Yeah.
So I'll let Brandon or Dario or whoever wants to introduce this talk.
Yeah, that's not me, it's you guys.
Okay, so what do you want to start with, spine terms?
That's the one on the, can you guys see my screen?
Yeah, I see that
now. We got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we added two terms for spinous roots, basically. The first case being when a root is shoot-borne and becomes hardened and starts serving in defense of the plant. The second is any lateral root that does the same thing. So any nutritive capacity is lost, in all examples we can find. These things are sclerified, they're very pointy. And yeah, they're spiny roots. So shoot-borne root spine, lateral root spine. And so do we have any questions about that? No? Okay. And then we've been working on lenticel too, and Dariel can speak about that a little bit.
I just had one quick comment. So yeah. This is why we need to move the indeterminate growth from the parent term.
Yeah, exactly.
Lack indeterminate growth. Uh-huh. And let's just look real quick. Where did my thing go? On root, do we say that they're nutritive and function, or do we say usually?
No, and that's something that I had put in my comment there, but Dennis was saying that maybe that's not the best idea, so we can comment, you know, again on that. I can revise that again.
What was that again?
So I have a comment here on the issue tracker for root. And basically I did propose to move the usually positively geotropic to a comment,
right,
and add nutritive function to the definition. But Dennis was saying that maybe not talk about nutrition. So I can add an additional comment once we workshop that around here and bounce ideas back and forth.
You're talking about on root, right?
Stilt roots, for example, that are really there to hold palm trees up.
Right.
There are roots.
Yeah, so currently that's root not in the definition of root. It's in the comment.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, so I think it's fine. I just wanted to double check and make sure that wasn't in there. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so I think the spine roots are good, and there's no controversy about those.
No, we're fine with all that. And I think this is really good because we've really cleaned up a term in a very good way for people.
Yeah.
Because both of these terms are really important physiologically.
You have some nice photos of them, and so,
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing that we've been working on is this came up because Marie was doing mapping with the sweet potato ontology, and you know, there's these structures on the surface of a sweet potato that superficially kind of look like a lenticel, and so we've been looking into lenticel and decided to add a new term for the structure on these tuberous roots, which is also how the tuberous root thing came up, and also to revise our current definition of lenticel a little bit.
So, well, I mean, the point here is this distinction is important for people if they're going to look into this, because the cause and effects are different.
Right, right.
Actually, the effect looks similar, but the causes are quite different.
Yeah, and
The phenotype is actually different.
Right, and the underlying structures are different, so it's important.
Yeah, so it's important for us to do, and this is a great example, as I was saying, you know, in that sort of talk when we give on lessons learned from the plantiome.
Mm-hmm.
When you build it.
Yeah. And so does anybody need a little explanation about lenticels and what they are, what they do?
Yeah, I don't.
You don't. No, you guys don't. You guys have all your root vegetables there that you're cutting up and studying. Yeah. That's wonderful.
We had some good salads and stuff.
So, Brandon or Dario, do you want to just read the proposed revised definition that we have here? And
right. So, initially, lenticel was a portion of ground tissue. And both lenticels and those lenticel-like structures on the sweet potatoes come from the periderm, or they are periderm. So we suggested that we move lenticel to a portion of shoot axis periderm. And they're like anatomically, they're distinguished because the phellum and the felloderm, which makes up normal periderm, have these like intercellular spaces because the cells aren't rectangle shaped, they're more circular. So we just suggested that be included in the definition. And then the lenticel-like structures on sweet potatoes are made up of the same like phellum and felloderm, but they're they're formed as like sort of like a wound response because of disruption to the epidermis. So like a lateral root coming out of a tuber.
And that's true. We actually looked at them. They're identical on carrots and parsnips and parsley and those kinds of roots. Interestingly enough, not in beta. But
so, oh, so they're always shoot axis periderm part.
No, the root. Not on the root. You look at a carrot. The really good way to view this is roots have this exarch protoxylum, right? That's and it's an actinostyle, so it's star-shaped in the very center. And lateral roots arise opposite those xylem points. So when you look at a carrot, you will see a row of these lenticel things. You'll see like four or five rows, which indicates how many protoxylum poles there are, therefore how many rows of lateral roots there are that are ephemeral. And the same thing's true on a sweet potato and parsnip and all those kind of guys. So these lenticel-like structures form when the lateral root, as Dario says, breaks through the epidermis, and then those lateral roots are ephemeral. As the root gets bigger and bigger, they get their vasculature disrupts.
Mm-hmm.
And they die. So then there's this room, a room there.
So, no, my comment, I'm not an expert, but my comment was is these lenticels are always part of the shoot axis periderm, or they're always present in the root rather than being on the...
What we're saying is...
are not in roots. That's the whole point.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's why we had to create a new term for the root ones.
Yeah. So lenticels are always in the shoot axis periderm. Right. And then the things that you see on a sweet potato are not in shoot axis periderm. They're in the root periderm.
So we are going to create the root lenticels?
No, root periderm scar is the new term.
Uh-huh.
Because it reflects what it is.
But people do call them in casual sense root lenticels.
They just call them lenticels,
casual.
So I suggest, you have the comment. So is there a harm if you just add a broader synonym, root lenticel?
No, there's no harm in that at all. And the reason there's no harm in that at all, Pankaj, is because that's lenticel in the sense of roots are used, you know, by farmers and people like that.
So I think we should add that.
Yeah, and I think it's in the literature a little bit, so. Yeah.
I mean, we can
like
add
to broad, have people not confuse them.
But we don't really have broad synonyms anymore, so.
Mm-hmm. Add a broad synonym.
Root lenticel.
Root lenticel. Okay.
So, do we know something about the function of this thing?
Well, our notion of the function is that they form as a little extra piece of bark when you get a wound, but the wound being the, you know, the emergence of the lateral root through the tissue. And by forming a wound response, you block it off to, you know, parasites and insects and whatnot. Whereas a conifer would use resins to do that.
So does it have something to do with, on the internet it says, it allows gas exchange between the atmosphere and the internal tissues.
That's for stems.
That's in stems, yeah.
That's the true lenticel.
It's actually not functioning in gas exchange.
So yeah, on a root, so the new term for the root, it's more of just like a scab to protect the vasculature.
Uh-huh.
It has no function in gas exchange.
Okay.
It's pure response.
But a lenticel on a shoot axis could function in gas exchange.
So I think having it as part of the common, this a function part may help some of the students.
So like mentioning in the root periderm scarm somewhere in like the comment saying that.
Yeah. So about the proper lenticel that it may be involved in gaseous exchange with internal tissues and the environment. Whereas for the other one, it's unlike, and the root one, you would just say it's unlike its shoot. It's not involved in that.
Okay, so the current, there's a comment in the current definition of lenticel that says gas exchange gas can be exchanged through a lenticel. So maybe just adding something to the comment of Root Paradigm Skarm about how it doesn't do that.
Yeah. That's a good idea. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just to distinguish them. And then we'll add that broad synonym too.
That sounds good.
This is great. I really like doing this one.
Yeah, this has been kind of interesting. We kind of went around whether to call it a wound, but I think scar is better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like leaf scar.
Yeah, like a leaf scar, kind of. It's a lateral root scar or wound scar.
Yeah. So
I'm going to edit that comment, or should I make a new comment, Laurel?
No, you can just edit it. Yeah, that's fine. Okay. You mean on the tracker?
Yep.
Yeah, it's fine. Either way, whatever you want to do, it's fine.
So, do we have any images?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we got images.
We did sections.
And, you know, external images, and we did some sections.
So, where can we put those?
Well, then what I do with images, I mean, I haven't sent these to him, but I usually just send those to Justin.
And that is true. Sending it to Justin is fine. I think what I'm thinking is that putting them on the Plantium website, create a page for that term.
I don't know how to do that.
We can show, and then we create a cross-ref in the term, in the ontology for this term, and that connects to our website. So that
people know
the images.
It would be nice if we could have it right on the term page. That would be great.
On the term page would be a challenge right now because I'm not.
It's an Amigo thing.
I'm not the one driving the Amigo development, but at least have it in place. So
yeah,
Justin's on the call here, so he.
We're all for that.
So what we can do is we can create a website access to you guys, so that you and we can show you how to create the pages on the website.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
And you go ahead and insert the image and call it by that particular term name or by the POID. And then we will connect that to that page. So any comments or extra images or annotations, you should just put it in there.
Okay.
That's great because I can put that in a report too.
Yeah.
So any new term that we create, if there are images, we should start putting the images there.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% behind that. I've been wanting to do that. This is great.
Yeah, that's great. I put in...
And I've been making images for a long time. I got lots of them.
Mm-hmm. So what's happening with the images? Is that...
Well, I don't know. There were two kinds of things, I think. Part of it was I gave a bunch to Justin... but I think we were trying to do images that might be useful for machine learning.
Right.
Yeah.
What's that?
So that's another, side branch.
Why don't you just send, let's say, two images and mark it on it where the lenticel is and what species it comes from, that section. Yep. And I will try to create something and let's come up with a prototype. Then you guys can follow.
Okay, perfect. Great.
Yeah, that'd be nice. So a picture is worth 1,000 words.
Well, we think in images, most biologists think in images.
Yeah, sure. Okay, and then the other thing that we've been kind of working on together with Brandon and Dario is after the meeting on the 11th of October, we decided to add specific types of fruit to the PO.
And with images.
With images. Images would be great there. That'd be very helpful. So Brandon and Dario worked up this Google Doc. Let me see if I can click on it here without disrupting the meeting. And they have a provisional fruit hierarchy. And Pankaj, I wanted to mention to you that after the, after you and I talked about this last week or the week before, Justin and I spent quite a bit of time trying to figure out if we could find, the original terms had POIDs.
Mm-hmm.
And the earliest file that we have from 2005, they were already merged. So I don't think there's any way to figure out what those alternate IDs originally belonged to, unless you have an old file from pre-version control. before they were merged.
You imagine that.
So I mean, I even went through the archives at Grammy, and I couldn't find anything anywhere.
The early all
2005, and they were already merged.
All the POC CVS was already converted into the SVN, whatever we had it right from the very beginning.
Yeah. So the proposal is that these would be new terms.
Go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
There's no way we can recover.
Yeah. So Brandon and Dara have been working away on this, and apparently this has been kind of an interesting experience because there's a lot of strong feelings in the community about different types of fruits. And so we were discussing this a little bit yesterday. So this is sort of the proposed hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And this will really help a lot. This will give us a little more granularity when we start talking about traits and so on. And
well, I would like to say, for example, Barbara Ambrose, who's here, works with other people, and they're working on, you know, the genes that control dry versus fleshy fruits, the genes involved in the dehiscence patterns, and all this kind of stuff. So I think we really want to have a nice, tight fruit thing, you know.
Yeah.
Fishing things. People. And that's because of, you know, there's huge agronomic interests in fruits.
Absolutely. And nuts. And I mean, these are really.
Yeah, fruits and nuts.
Palms.
California is the land of fruits and nuts.
No, go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
I think we're going to work on this a lot, and we're going to image them all. And we probably will image some things with both image. I don't know how to say it. Picture of a fruit. But also maybe with some line art.
Yeah, line art.
Line art will be useful here. And maybe with two examples of each kind that kind of represent a little variability.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, so I just put in, these are all the synonyms we have on fruit. Right,
yeah,
now.
So that means we can get into that then. Great.
Yeah, and so we want to make sure that those were all kind of, it looked like most of them were kind of captured.
Who's good in doing the line art? Are you, Dario?
Well, there's line art that exists. It's very simple. There's old line art. There's no copyrights on it by the Germans.
Let's take it.
And so we'll take it. Like, you know, in the Flonsen Familion, this huge.
So yeah, so
we
have
no problem getting that.
And I'll gather that.
And I think, you know, at the meeting in Oregon, there was a person from Texas A&M Medical School, I think it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he and I he loved the stuff that I, in fact, brought up line art, because he says there's a lot of data that people are born with patterns already built in their brains.
Yeah.
That is shape patterns. And so they see the stuff more clearly that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like it. And then I think the other thing, and then I'll shut up, is if I could see Laurel's thing again.
Which?
With synonyms. Could you just scroll to that for me?
Which one? I'm sorry?
The synonyms.
Oh, the synonyms down here, yeah.
Yeah, that list. Okay, I'm not going to go through those, but some of these synonyms are interesting because they're the kind of, what we say, you know, the Appalachian terms. In other words, people use many of these terms like pod. A pod is used for many fruit types in the common vernacular.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to draw attention to the stone fruit. Stone fruit has a very, on the other hand, has a very precise meaning. It's really a drupe, and there's really hardly any departures from that. But some of these nut, again, is used for various kinds. So I think we need to take that information and pay attention to synonymies.
Yeah, definitely. So we kind of were talking about pod a little bit yesterday.
I want to have a bunch of parents and then children of it, you know, sort of the way we think.
You know, pod is a word that's used in the trait ontology quite a bit. And so that's something we need to kind of think about.
Yeah.
Discussing this yesterday about legume.
Yeah, legume, a lot of people call them pods, but follicles are also called pods, for example. So I was thinking... well, in fact, salix are sometimes too. I was thinking possibly that you have the legume, you have the synonym pod, like pea pod that is put in here, for example, but we might cite one piece of molecular literature, say in the development world, where they're talking about a legume versus a citation where they're talking about a non-legume.
That's true, and there are genes that are responsible for dehiscence.
Right.
Definitely.
In Arabidopsis, they know those genes that are responsible for Seleuc's dehiscence.
Yeah, so I think the reason I'm bringing this up partially is because, you know, when we work in the gene world now, because it's more modern, so we've learned a lot historically, we don't really have synonyms in those very often.
No, and that's fine.
We don't want a different name for the cup genes just because someone did something wrong in there.
Right.
Where the fruit types like follicle, follicarium, follicetum, where do they go?
Well, you know, that's so what we're trying to do is build a structure that we can add to.
Yeah.
So for example, there's a thing called a drupelet. Mm-hmm. Well, that's just a diminutive for droop. So there's a lot of lets, you know, akene lets and blah, blah, blah. Let. So those will all be workable in then, because we'll have, basically, in a sense, we'll have all the parents and grandparents.
Yeah. That's fine.
So we're trying to think about this holistically.
No, that's fine.
Yes. The next step we're going to do, go ahead, Dario.
So something like a follicate or a drupelet or an akenelet, things that are just smaller versions of something that exists in this, will go in as synonyms. Because if the only distinction is that it's smaller and by who knows how much, it doesn't really need its own term.
I agree, yeah.
We're trying to move size dependence out of it.
Yeah. And it's good to give examples of each of these, and that will help people kind of know which one they're talking about.
So I would say that let's create an image page for lenticel, and then quickly we move on to, since you're going to add these fruit terms, let's focus on creating image pages for these fruits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's great. That's exactly what we want to be doing.
Yeah, that's fine. And it's a good outreach, because then we're also entitled to train the new age of plant biologists and understanding the basic structure of plants.
Yeah.
They keep on calling different.
You can see, you know, there's descent in some ways. It's because, as I said in my talk, you know, the issue is about descriptors versus homology, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
So descriptors are fine if you're trying to key plants out and you just go pod or whatever you go, because that's what you see. And you don't really need to have a huge lexicon for writing keys to plants in the wood. Right. On the other hand, if you're doing other things like anatomy or morphology or something, you do need it. So we have to make them somewhat congruent.
Right, that's right.
I have one question about the akene here.
Yeah.
So a sunflower is an akene?
Okay, yeah. So let me go to that. So akenes, well, there's a description for akenes. Now, there's a special term for the sunflower family's akene. And I'm just going to tell you why, but we're not going there yet. It's because sometimes the ovaries, there's what are called pseudomonomerous gynecea. And what it is, you can have single carpels, like in a bean. But some things, like the sunflowers, they start with two fused carpels, but one of those aborts. So that only one of them goes to maturity. So that fruit looks like an akene. Hmm. But in fact, it has a slightly different developmental pathway.
Hmm.
But we think that that may not be important, you know, in terms of the genome. I just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm, interesting. Okay.
But pseudomonomery is very common in some of these fruit types.
But strawberry is the example I always think of for akene. Is that's correct?
Well, those are akenelets.
Oh, they're akenelets.
Yeah, because the things you think of as the seeds are actually the fruits.
They're fruits, yeah, on the surface of the root.
Yeah. So that's where you would use a diminutive. Just like a raspberry, you would use drupelet.
Drupelet, yeah. Well, very good. So the next step here is they're going to create a...
Or you can just put the definition, get stuck in your teeth.
No, I think the definitions are looking good. So I think you guys are now perfectly fit to start adding these terms.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
And this will be very useful, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And then we're going to need to go back to the TO and look at what in the pod morphology trait, if we want to, we'll do some revisions here to make things match and add that granularity that we need. So that's wonderful. It's really great to get this done. After we do this, we should look at inflorescences.
No.
I had a shudder.
You think we're masochists, huh?
Yeah.
And one more thing that I
want to look at inflorescences, actually. I've been looking at them for 20 years and publishing on them. So it's a big deal for me.
Mm-hmm. There's one thing that came up, and I will just note it down as quickly, is that, and it's also a question about, Chris is not here, it's a question about how we annotate things. Mm-hmm. So somebody, for example, took a seed, right, and wanted to do genomics on it. So what they did was they took out the embryo that went became one sample, and then rest of the part of the seed, that is endosperm and seed coat, is another sample, right? So, I don't know, what do we call that? That these two embryos perfectly fine, but what do you call the rest of it?
You know, you bring up actually, Pankaj, something in a sense we talked about yesterday, about once we did fruits, we ought to also do seeds, because not all seeds are the same. So there are seeds with endosperm, as you point out, but there are also seeds that have no endosperm but have what's called perisperm.
Mm-hmm.
One that have Schlesa sperm and things like that. So we really need to deal with that. And then what the seed coat is.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been thinking about that in parallel. The
Strawberry guys published a paper, and this is an example from there. And the journal accepted that term. They started calling that seed coat plus endosperm as a ghost.
Ghost.
Yeah, ghost.
H-O-S-T. I don't know. And reviewers accepted it, journal accepted it, and now we're in trouble. How do you annotate those genes?
Yeah, and the way we did it in the past was we just annotated to the endosperm and the seed coat.
But that is a wrong situation, because in the past, what we did was we did two annotations. One, that a gene is in from that sample, if the gene A shows up in that sample being differentially expressed or expressed rather, we would make two annotations, one to the seed coat and one to the endosperm. But unfortunately, the reality is we don't know whether that expression transcript came, RNA came from endosperm or from...
Right, because they didn't look at them separately.
Yeah, right, because it was combined, right?
Yes, yeah, it was a combined sample, so we don't know. And so I think in that situation, the best way is to annotate it to the seed term, but we are going to see several of those issues at that point of time.
And I understand this, Pankaj, because in Cycads and Ginkgos and those guys, we have this what we call 1N, 2N project.
Mm-hmm.
So we're segregating, we've actually segregated the seed coat, that megagametophyte that's in those, and then the embryo, because they're so big.
Mm-hmm.
And the transcriptomes on all three.
Yeah, but that is it. But there you have the actual.
But we didn't pool it.
Right.
So and your point is, what do you do when you pool these things?
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And so, then, you know, then having a
one quick comment here.
And seed is not equivalent here.
Right. We have to be kind of careful because, you know, I think Barry's not here, and I don't want to speak for him, but I think what Barry would say is that in the PO, we've been focused on things that are actually naturally occurring, not like, I mean, we do have the in vitro structures, but if we, you know, if we create this ghost term and define it as a seed that's had the embryo removed, then do you have a stem that has had the leaves removed? Or, you know, I'm not sure exactly if we want to go there with the PO.
I understand
the question and the issue of annotating something like that, but I mean,
two things here. I think I two things here. First thing is, I think Dennis was saying that it's not appropriate to annotate to seed. I would counter that, because if you do annotate to seed, it is not wrong. Because
I wasn't saying that I thought it was wrong.
In the present scenario, I think that is the only option, and we can add an extra information in the extended annotation section saying this sample did not have embryo, right? So otherwise, there is no other way to find that out.
I agree with you. And then best annotation. We'll do that with a gymnosperm. We can say, you know, on the one, we can say did not have embryo, was endosperm and seed coat. Another one can say was endosperm and seed coat, right? In another one, we might be saying seed coat and megagametophyte.
Right.
The problem with putting it on seed punk is would be in the same experiment, they also looked at whole seeds.
Well.
But that would not have the extended annotation saying minus embryo.
Right, but if you just pull all the annotations on seed, those will be mixed together.
That is true, but we will have to quickly, carefully. But I think it's an annotation issue, and it's how the data is managed. We should get resolved on that side. On the other hand, you raised the question of Barry would like to have all the natural conditions in it, and I think the plant science is drifting very quickly to an area where they will be challenging the natural conditions and samples. When we start doing all these exercises on mutants, basically everything is a mutant, then you would start finding some weird structures that didn't exist before. So we need to be careful about being only naturally existing versus created ones.
I think the word he uses is canonical. Yeah. I mean, we could definitely create a term, but we have to figure out, maybe we'd call it like a ghost seed.
Chris just joined in. Chris, are you here?
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
Hey, I'm telling you a scenario which just came in the annotation of strawberry and strawberry data.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to address by having you on board and suggesting what is the best way to move forward. So, for example, strawberry folks took their seed,
mm-hmm,
and then took out the embryo out of that.
Okay.
And they did two transcriptome analysis, one only on embryo that came out, that was teased apart,
mm-hmm,
and the rest is seed coat and endosperm.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. So rest of the seed.
Yep.
And how do we annotate to the cumulative part that is seed plus seed coat, endosperm plus seed coat, because there is no term to designate that. And so ideally it would have been seed minus embryo, but there is no way we can annotate it that way in using the GAFs.
Right. So
we don't want to annotate to two terms, seed coat and embryo, and seed coat and endosperm, because we don't know where it came from.
Right. Yeah. So, and this is not a structure kind of found in nature generally. This is a kind of like an experimental. Yeah.
It's an experimental condition where two combined tissues were pooled, basically.
Yeah. 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 So, you know, channeling Barry, we shouldn't have this in the ontology, but for one-offs like this, you know, you can imagine having in the ontology, having just that a named term that is kind of like, you know, seed coat plus endosperm derives from seed. So you've got a relationship that way, and then it has part the two terms that way. So that's one way of doing it. And you'd mark in the PO that this is a kind of like, you know, a structure not typically found in right, nature.
Derived by manipulation from a seed.
Yeah, yeah.
And we have that derived by manipulation relation, so we could use that.
Yeah.
So, we can create it. I don't know what we would call it. We maybe could call it a ghost seed or something.
No, not a ghost seed. But you would just call it seed coat and endosperm.
Yep. And or plus or something like that, yeah.
The other thing I was thinking is that maybe we can just annotate to seed, but in the extended column, we just say excludes embryo.
Yeah. Then that's yeah. problematic because of like the logic of negation. So I wouldn't go that way, really.
Okay.
Well, we can open a tracker for it and toss it around a little bit and see what bubbles up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we are going to see a lot of expression data sets like that.
There's no end of manipulated tissues that we could create.
Well, these are derivatives, right?
Yeah. So while Chris is on the phone here, maybe we could, in the last few minutes here, we could talk about the taxon constraints.
Yes, one of my favorite subjects.
Yeah. Yeah, we had this on the agenda last week. We discussed it a little bit. So I have some notes on the agenda about it. So the thing that we're kind of dealing with is what's the right relation to use and how do we deal with ones that are in more than one taxa? So this kind of came up of a discussion about microspores. And you see microspores are present, you know, in various kind of unrelated taxa. So I put down kind of the two different options that we had discussed that with you. And then I think at the last meeting, Barry suggested just using the in taxon relationship rather than the only in taxon.
No, just use the only in.
But can we say only in this? If it's in more than one unrelated taxa and you say it's only in gymnosperms and flowering plants, then it's not really only, yeah.
I'm not following. Okay, so,
if you look at things,
the relation to use is only in taxon.
Okay, so if you look at this part on the agenda right here, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that microspore structure is and these taxa do not have a common ancestor.
Yeah, yeah.
So and one then way to Dennis do it, listed yeah, the yeah. different taxa here mm-hmm. and these different ferns and so on because we were trying to figure out if we could say, you know, in the ferns or whatever.
Sure, yeah, yeah. So you can do that with a union class, but I don't like using the union classes right. so much. There's issues with them in kind of reasoning with ALK. I think there's a lot of mileage to be had in just the ones for which you can actually have a kind of evolutionary story about where you know where they actually evolved and where they are lost. So maybe focus on those first. But in some cases, yeah, maybe unions are the only way to go. But either way, it's still the only in taxon relation. That's the one that you use.
And what is wrong with using in taxon?
So we apply a kind of like an expansion rule with kind of like only in taxon that just makes it kind of like stronger. There's kind of owl reasons basically,
but we could only use that on one taxon.
There's two relations you use: only in taxon and never in taxon. You can also do present in taxon, which is a weaker relation, which just says found in monocots, but we're not making any statement about where it doesn't appear.
So present in taxon.
Yeah, that's a kind of very weak relation. Yeah, it's just saying it's found here, but we're not saying anything about where it's not found.
Well, and I kind of understand what you're saying about kind of do the low-hanging fruit first, but this is kind of a problem that we're going to deal with very quickly if we start adding these. So it'd be good to kind of get it straightened out.
So for your microspores, is this an exclusive list? Are you saying it never appears outside of these?
Dennis?
Microspores are a term you always use when you have what are called heterosporous plants, plants that make two types of spores. So they make one type called microspores that then make male gametophytes, which produce sperm. The other side of it is a megaspore, which makes a female gametophyte, as it's often called, which makes an egg. All of the seed plants do microspores by definition. They have to.
Right.
And then there's one group in the lycophytes that do it independently. And there's another group in the ferns that do it independently.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the mosses and algae and stuff, they just have regular myospores. So the way you would treat spores, if you start with the algae, is you would have what are called mitospores that are a product of a mitosis. And so if you're diploid, all those products will be diploid. And then you have meiospores. So if you're diploid, it's a result of meiosis, which means you have the chromosome number and make 1N spores. That's common in all the bryophytes. And then as you move into the land plants, there's these three origins where those meiospores are of two types, a micromyospore in a sense and a megamyospore. So there's no way to, and we don't know anything about these. You know, clearly they've evolved independently in three different lineages, but we really, which indicates there might be something different in the genomes, but we really, other than my saying, oh, I think there must be something different in the genome, have any data. So I don't know what we do with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, it's a simple descriptive term where we just say a microspore is the product of meiosis that gives rise to a microgametophyte and sperm.
Right. I don't think the definition is in question. It's just how we capture this taxon relationship.
So I wrote the genera that they occur.
Right. So we have all these. And I mean,
these are the ferns that do it. And it's one monophyletic group. And then wherever it is, there's...
Marsilia? Yeah, so it's right here. Yeah, so this was what...
So Marsiliaceae and Salviniaceae form a monophyletic group together. And then in the lycophytes, it's Selaginella and Isoides.
Right, so I've got those two. Yeah. Got some of the ferns, Selaginella and Isoetes, yeah.
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 So what we have is five origins, right? Once in the seed plants, which would be flowering plants plus gymnosperms.
Right.
Once in the ferns, which would be this Marsilia plus Salvinia group. And once in the lycophytes, which would be the Selaginella and Isoides group.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested in this because there's actually some indication in these microspores in Arabidopsis in some plants. I was just reading this yesterday, where there's these sort of small RNAs and whatnot that are regulating them, and their transcriptomes are quite different from the rest of the plant, at least in Arabidopsis.
Yeah. And so, Chris, that it's still technically incorrect in the Go the way it is. Because in Tanya's comment, I haven't gotten around to responding to Tanya's comment, but Tanya's comment was that the taxon restriction was correct in Go, but it isn't, obviously.
Yeah.
You guys are going to face the same issue, I think, if you're dealing with microspore development, a term for microspore development. So yeah.
So that term is not considered as a plant microspore development?
I don't know anything else that has microspores.
I think it is specific to plants, but it's still, they shouldn't say that it's only in flowering plants.
No.
So if you have evidence that that's not true, then that should go.
Pretty good evidence.
What you should say, I'll tell you what you should say. I'm not trying to, you should, number one, animals make gametes directly. So the direct product of meiosis is a gamete.
Right.
And not a spore. So what you really need to say is, instead of flowering plants, you need to say heterosporous plants. And then that covers all these bases.
Yeah. I mean, so we could go this route of the union class and say, you know, heterosporous microspores, this is all the ones that make heterosporous spores.
Well, all heterosporous
plants. All heterosporous plants make spores.
And then we have heterospory and homospory in the PO. If we don't, we will.
Right, Chris. Plants are complicated.
Yeah, the life cycle's a nuisance, you know.
Yeah.
But that's what makes them interesting, though. That's what makes it really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, but basically, if you want to restrict it to the set and only the set, then you make a union class. If you want to make a weaker statement, you can just say present in taxon and then list them. But that's not understood to be an exclusive list. It's still useful information to have that it's definitely found in these. And then you can maybe put a very high level, kind of like never in. So you're kind of gradually kind of like blocking out areas of the space in which it is allowed and which it's not allowed. So those are the kind of constructs you have to work with. And from there, it's just a matter of kind of assigning evidence to each one and making as strong as the statement as you think the evidence allows.
So I think, Chris, that basically the strongest statement is heterosperous plants.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone were to find a new heterosperous plant, it would be covered rather than having this.
Well, last week, if we created this union class, which is only in these ones example, then we would have to go back and change that. But
the reason I don't want to do only these is because a taxonomist might combine two of them or something. Put a third name, and we don't want to go down that road. So if we just say heterosperous plants, then we don't have to worry about the.
But that's not a There's no taxon ID for heterosperous plants. We could put that in the.
You have to have a taxon identity for that. I don't think.
Well, if we want to make it a relationship with a formal relationship, we would. That's what the proposal is here, these prototype taxon constraints.
But we don't do that too much.
Well, the idea is that we would like to do that.
And I, for example, plant ovary. Tie that to Magnoliophyta is not good because there are many synonyms for Magnoliophyta. And these molecular guys change those names sometimes when things go into different positions on the family tree. But it makes no difference in terms of the presence or absence of the structure.
Yeah, but you see, the key thing here is not the name Magnilla. It's the taxon ID here from NCBI.
I'm just telling you that taxonomy is not stable. And so when you start playing these games, then you're going to have to go in and annotate or change or do whatever. And NCBI is not the last word on this.
Yeah, that's something to consider too.
Because new phylogenetic trees come out every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so in terms of characters that support nodes, those don't really change. So it's the characters for us that are important, because if you're working in EvoDevo, it's the phenology or phenotype thing that you want to study. You don't give a damn about the taxonomy in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the vagaries of taxonomists who can't make up their mind. But if you think about it, remember what I said at the beginning of this? So not only is the taxonomy not stable, because it can't possibly be, because we often have new data and we need to incorporate that in our taxonomy. By the same token, the PO can't be absolute and stable through time either, because we get new information and new data, and then we have to readjust our thinking. And I think the Lenisil question today is a good example of that.
Yeah.
That's a polemic, by the way.
All right, I have to go now.
Okay.
Whoa, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean to do that.
This is like, oh, God, I'm not getting on that call again.
Yeah. No. It's, I understand the issues with kind of NCBI taxon and off. You know, sometimes it depends what we want to do with this. If we want to get kind of like highly precise, then maybe we have to explore using a kind of like, you know, some kind of what the Finiscape group did, where they kind of like combined different kind of like taxonomies and made their own one. Or we can just, you know, go with what's in NCBI and do only make statements that are kind of consistent with it. And if it requires making kind of like some distinctions that NCBI don't make, or that they make they're making the incorrect call. I mean, they're not going to catch up, Chris.
They're not going to constantly be catching up with the forefront.
Yeah.
But I think the way, is it possible to do this as, for example, NCBI, blah, blah.
Yeah, the problem is you can put as many kind of, you know, owl annotation assertions as you like, and they don't have any logical consequence.
Mm-hmm.
Informative to humans. We can certainly do as many of those as we like, but they don't give us any kind of like power for reasoning. So some of the main use cases for this are, you know, one thing that I've found in Uber on it, where we've got really dense taxon constraints, is you often find really interesting inconsistencies in the ontology that you wouldn't have kind of come up, you know, found otherwise. It turns out that maybe one group was using pharynx one way, you know, in a very kind of vertebrate specific way, and another group was using it in a generic kind of pan-metazoan way. And we didn't realize that until we started putting taxon constraints and by following the developmental relationships down to tissues that are only present in one lineage, we find inconsistencies we wouldn't have found otherwise. So that's one of the main use cases. The other use case, detecting errors in when we do kind of like automatic propagation of gene annotations, typically in Go, but it could be in other areas too. So that's another area. But then that's the areas I've kind of focused on. But then the other area is just making a resource that is informative and then useful for kind of like evolutionary biologists like yourself. And then that's when we get into the trickier areas where we have to really, go a bit deeper with some of these taxa. And, I think if we're making statements at the level of kind of like the Viridiplantae and the Magnolifta and monocots and so on, you don't get into some of these issues, I think, but it's when you start trying to make the more detailed ones that it starts getting really interesting. I think we should just kind of go for it and just kind of record.
It's okay. I think this dialogue has been very useful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Dennis, the plant ovary though is correct. It's only in the flowering plants, right?
Correct.
Right. Okay, good. But you said that the name of the flowering plants might change.
Yeah, but this is okay because if you have a defined reference like this, then a person can go back and see what that means.
Right.
You see what I mean?
That's the point of using
it. Yeah, so I think that works out fine.
Okay, good.
And then you can just say microspores found only in heterosporous vascular plants, and then you can use the name for vascular plants.
Right, but we don't have a taxon ID for that category. And that's why there was this discussion about these union classes that...
I thought maybe there was. I need to... I think there is probably in NCBI. Or as you said, a unification of classes.
For heterosporous plants?
Well, it would be... There's probably in the... thing, there's going to be a thing like euphyllophytes and somebody else and lycophytes. And then you can say only in composite taxon euphyllophytes, blah, and give that one, and blah, 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 and give that one. Right?
Yeah, so that's the suggestion here. We say only in taxon.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So I need to look into
that. Actually would
I don't know what NCBI's terms for those groups are, but I...
Yeah, I mean, we can look that up, but we weren't sure if we could do that in the...
Well, I think Chris knows whether we can do that or not.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the other thing is NCBIR, they do respond to kind of like changes, to requests for change, if it's reasonably straightforward and doesn't get into kind of...
See, I think they're probably not going to want to make those changes in the basal part of the land plant tree, because... Yeah. It's not established yet. We have some floaters down there where we can't. But there are some inclusive terms. I mean, I just have to look and see what they use.
So, Chris, if we made this union class, where would that live? I mean, that would just live in our little slice of the NCBI taxonomy?
Yeah, it gets kind of annoying then. Maybe you should just use the Go union classes and request them there. It makes it easier if they're all managed in one place.
Well, it kind of makes sense, yeah. But then we would have to request these, create them there.
Yeah.
We can look at that. Yeah, that actually wouldn't be a bad way to go with it, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I think so. I'd think about how many you might need if it's going to be on the order of like 100.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
All right. Okay, I really do have to go now.
Okay, yes.
Okay, that was great.
I'll talk to you later.
Okay, sorry.
Bye, Chris.
Bye.
Okay, well, I think we need to kind of wrap up. One thing I just want to say really quickly was at our next meeting on the 8th of November, John Doonan is going to be coming, and he's going to give us an overview of the high throughput phenotyping work that they're doing.
Is he doing it on 8th of November or
somebody? 8th of November, yes.
It's the 8th. I'll send out a reminder because I'm going to invite Sunisa.
I will be in Davis.
Yeah.
Me
I know.
Too, and Chris too.
And so will Chris.
And I won't be in New York.
Recorded or whatever you want to do.
Right. We might end up taking a call remotely.
Yeah, I could do that.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah.
And please make sure that Eugene and his group is available for taking part in the image analysis.
Yep, I'm on that.
Right. Before we leave, Dennis, I did send you an email about banana. Somewhere I read bananas are actually berries that grow on an arboreal root. Is that true?
No, bananas are sort of berries from inferior ovaries. So the part that you peel off is really the equivalent of what the outside of an apple is.
Uh-huh.
And they come in, you know, those big inflorescences. We did a banana, I think we did a banana ontology where we defined things like cigar leaf and hand and stuff like that. But I don't remember seeing an email. When did you send it?
I just sent it.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen it yet.
Anyway,
I'll write back to you.
Right. And so feel free to send the lenticel images. And if you can, on the image, if you can draw by hand, send me two images, one native and one with some kind of an annotation on it.
Great line art in the old literature. It's great. Yeah.
And so send me those and then I'll try to create a page.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, perfect.
That's a problem. And Justin's on the call here too. He can help. Hi, Justin. Yeah. You've been kind of quiet today.
Yeah, well, again, you're not talking about stuff that I have a whole lot of input on, so.
What are your feelings on the microspore lineage in the plants?
Yeah.
No. Okay, well, I think we should probably wrap up. The rest of the crew is probably going to come in the office here in a minute. Okay, thanks, everybody.
Okay, bye.
Okay,
bye.
Talk to you later. Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Out what I'm doing. Stop sharing.
Oh, okay, she did that.